Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformation. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Life Transformation Radio. We are live on Blog Talk Radio, who hosts the show. We are listened to in 23 countries. I am super, super pumped. And I want to welcome some of our listeners from Belgium, Switzerland, U.S., Canada, Portugal, the Philippines, Malaysia, Germany, all of Europe, man. Welcome to the show. So I am your host, Master Resiliency Trainer, Inspirational Speaker, Author Sean Douglas. Welcome to all the listeners listening from wherever you are. And I want to thank you so much for your support over these past couple months. We are live every Wednesday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern and every first and third Friday at the same time at 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. And so if you're listening right now on iTunes or Stitcher, catch us on a live show. We are live, so you have the ability to call into the guest, and the call-in number is 657-383-1109. Again, 657-383-1109. If you have a legitimate question for myself or any of the guests, you can call in, ask them a question, talk to them. And, yeah, when I say legitimate, I mean legitimate, because then you'll just be kicked out. So on the show, we have impactful and amazing guests that are impacting everyone around them. And my guest today is absolutely no different. So help me welcome to the show, Jamie Newman. What is up, buddy?
Oh, man. A lot's going on, but I'm excited to be here and I'm super pumped to be on the show. We're going to have a lot of fun, man.
Dude, I've been looking forward to this all day, man. I am super pumped. So let's get started. So Jamie Newman is a leadership trainer, consultant, and coach. He's the founder of YourBestManager.com, an online resource designed to help first-time managers learn how to lead fully engaged and highly successful teams. Jamie is also the host of the very successful Your Best Manager podcast, featuring expert interviews that center around this question: who was your best manager and why? Prior to Your Best Manager, Jamie spent over 8 years working with a major global recruiting and human capital consulting firm where he helped managers in small businesses, mid-market firms, and Fortune 100 companies to recruit, hire, performance manage, engage, and retain great people. If you want to connect with Jamie, you can look him up at facebook.com/Jamie, J-A-M-I-E, Jamie Newman, YBM. Or you can look on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram. He's all there. All of the notes inside of this episode are going to have all of his social media platforms, Google+. So I beg you, look him up. He is an amazing dude. So welcome to this. Dude, I can't even tell you. I was so pumped on. Dude, I was a guest on your show. And yeah. And I mean, I'm not tooting my own horn, but you know, like, dude, our show was like amazing, dude. Like, you're one of the best hosts that I've had a chance to work with.
Well, thank you. I always say that it takes a great guest to be a great host, and you brought it, man. I guess this just goes without saying, you're a pretty passionate dude. And if I can, as a host, find some way to get the person I'm talking to fired up about something important to them, I've won. It has nothing to do with me from then on out. And I think that's exactly what happened.
Oh yeah, dude. As soon as we started talking about, because I mean, it gets personal, right? Like on your show, you're asking yourself, like, who's your best manager? And I think there's an emotional connection, right? When people come on the show and they're like, oh, I'm going to talk about this guy who changed my life. Like, it's emotional, it's personal to people, you know, when transformation happens. That's why I love this show, because you go from where you were to where you are to where you're going, and somebody or something helped you along the way, and you take that with you. You don't just drop it at the point of transformation, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. And that's one of the privileges I have when I'm interviewing people on the show, is I get to hear everybody else's story about who had an impact on them. And you're right. I think it is emotional. The people that have the biggest challenge when I interview them with that question are the people who unfortunately have been, I'll say victimized. It's not necessarily about a victim mentality, but
sure.
There's a lot of people who unfortunately haven't had tremendous influences on them as formal managers. And so typically we will end up in those cases talking about mentors, but I've had someone on the show where they're just like, dude, I've only had bad bosses. And, but even that, I guess, is emotional too. When someone reflects back, it's just like, man, like I didn't have that great person. I had to go figure it out myself, and I had to seek out mentors and books or mentors through training programs or mentors yeah. just through personal friends. But yeah, I mean, on both sides, I guess it's emotional, right?
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I know when I was talking about one of my dudes, you know, when the show came out, you know, and the episode aired, I tagged him and said, "Hey man, you know, here's a podcast that I was on. I think you'd like it." And he's like, "Dude, I never knew that, man. I appreciate you giving me a shout out." I'm like, "Yeah, dude, like you're awesome. You know, I'm all about elevating people and bringing value to people. And sometimes yeah. a simple thank you, writing a letter, you know, something, just giving somebody a shout out, like, dude, you changed my life, man. I appreciate you. You know, I think if more people did that, it'd be a beautiful place."
Well, and here's the irony of it. I didn't actually get asked myself who my best manager was until maybe like 15 episodes in. And which is funny because it's the Your Best Manager podcast. You'd think that'd be a common question. But it's not always asked, for starters. But there's a lot of people who they don't actually think about it or recognize the people who had an influence on them until well after. I mean, and that's one of the tough things about being a manager is you could have an incredible impact on somebody if you are a leader. And they may not even know it for 20 years when they actually look back. And in the moment, they may be ticked off at you. They may think you're a horrible person. We'll sit back and reflect and be like, man, if he or she didn't do that for me, I don't know where I'd be. And that's kind of a cool thing, because I sometimes ask, I need to do it more often, but I sometimes ask, hey, does this person know about the impact that they've had? And sometimes they say, yes, I've told them. And other times they're like, no, I'm going to call them right now. I feel like I should.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that. Absolutely. So the first question that I always ask everybody that comes on the show, the first question that I always ask is why? Because I feel like that has got to be the main question when you wake up in the morning. Like, why am I going to do something? When we go through a bad breakup, it's like, why? When we have a best friend stab us in the back, why? When something crazy happens in our life, you're just like, why? Right? It's got to be the most motivating question that everybody asks at least 20 times a day. You know what I mean? Someone spills your coffee, you're just like, why? So what is your why, man? Like, what, like, why do you do what you do?
Yeah. So I don't want to say the cliche answer that it's about like my family or a higher calling that I have. Those things are true. I mean, my family is super important. My faith is super important. And so I ultimately do what I do to serve those two things. But the, I guess, purpose behind what I do is that one thing that always frustrated me is I worked with a lot of first-time managers in my last job. It was just, we were a sales organization. So you get a lot of young people who are hired in their early 20s, typically, not all the time. And, a few years in, they get promoted into their very first manager role. And some of them are naturally okay at it. But a lot of them really struggle. I mean, I struggled myself when I was a first-time manager. So I've been through it. And so there's a little bit where working alongside struggling managers after I'd figured it out, I mean, when I hadn't figured it out or when I wasn't very good, it didn't matter. But when I knew in my head, logically, this is how you lead people, and just made sense to me. Uh-huh. 'Cause after it clicked, it just seemed so simple. And I'd watch other people struggling. And they're stressed out and they have tough conversations with one of their employees and they don't understand why people quit and they don't understand why people won't listen and all this stuff. And in my head, I was just like, but some of this stuff is so simple. You just have to care for your people. And people would be like, yeah, that sounds good. But like, how do you actually do that? And so part of the reason why I do what I do is to connect the dots between how do you actually like drive performance, because you got a job to do, and care for people. Because if you can't do those two things, like if you overcare, people like you, but you don't take them anywhere, and so you're unsuccessful. And if you drive results but don't care about your people, maybe you'll achieve some success, but no one will like you. So there's catch there. But the big problem is most managers, if you ultimately break it down, they want to be able to lead people with a little bit less stress and anxiety. They want to be able to leave on time. They want to be able to have fun at work. And so by doing what I do, I get to help people do that. But maybe even more important than that, there's a article. I talk about this all the time. But there's an article that I've got pasted above my computer that says, "We wait too long to train our leaders." It's by a guy named Jack Zenger in Harvard Business Review. And essentially he shows that through all the training development he's done, he found out that most managers in the companies that he's worked with, and I think, I don't know how many thousands of companies, most managers are first-time managers around the age of 30, but they don't actually receive any leadership training until they're in their 40s. And oftentimes that's after they've been promoted into some sort of director or executive level role, which means most managers, supervisors, lead for 10 years without any training, and it's all trial and error development, and that has casualties. And so it's just like, in the grand scheme of things, if managers learn how to lead better, well, think about like the ripple effect of, like, you know, happier employees, more productive companies, higher employee engagement. I mean, there's so many great things that can happen through the impact of a leader. And so that's the purpose of what I do. But yeah, the cliche answer still, I mean, I do it to provide for my family because I love them and to live out my faith.
So I love, because you hit on so much, man. leaders getting developed late, you know? So yeah. I don't know if that's because that's just not how their company is. I don't know if that's just the way that their strategic management plan is, you know, but I will tell you that in the military, there is a set time frame that you learn each leadership skill. So when you join the military, you know, you go through basic, you go through test school, you go to your first base, and then within, so after 3 years, you go to Airman Leadership School. So in the Air Force, everybody's an airman. But the ranks of E1 to E4 are all airmen. And then you have NCOs, which are non-commissioned officers, or sergeants, you know, from E5 and above. So if you're an E4 and you're a senior airman, then you're going to ALS. Like within because in 3 years, you put on senior airman. So between your 3 and 5 year mark, you're going to ALS. After that 5 year mark, you may sew on, you know, sergeant, like staff sergeant or something, right? As soon as you sew that on, you are now booked to go to course 15. And course 15 is considered the non-commissioned officer course. It's the next step in leadership course. Guess what happens when you put E6 on? You then have to go to another leadership course. So when you get promoted, every rank that you get promoted to, so like right now as an E6, I go through course 14. As soon as I'm done with that and I put on another rank, I'll then go through senior non-commissioned officer school. And then when I'm done with that and I put on another rank, I will go to another non-commissioned, like every rank has a school that you go to become a leader. Corporate world, I don't think does that. I think the military is really the only people that do that.
Yeah. And so here's the irony of it. Some of the best guests I've had on my show, and some of the best leadership consultants, and some of the best bosses and leaders I've worked for and worked with have military background. And now the military leadership training, I don't want to say it's perfect, but I mean, it's critical. The whole concept of the military comes down to life or death. You can't have someone who's afraid to give someone feedback if it's going to save someone's life, right? So priority of it is there. The only thing that I've seen just so that I can be balanced here, the only thing that I've seen as a challenge is sometimes a lot of the military leaders are sometimes a little bit over hard because hitting your sales quota and saving someone's life are two very different priorities.
absolutely.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, I don't really know why companies don't do it. I actually met with a guy. He's a talent manager for a local company here in Calgary, and they're investing in their first-time managers. I was blown away because I was so happy to hear it. But problem is, it's difficult to see a financial return on investment. And senior managers, business executives, company owners, human resources, they've got a million different priorities. And we live in a day and age where if you can't track it and measure it, it's very hard to justify cost. And so if you spend $2,000 on a program or $10,000 on a program for leadership development, the people walk away without anything that you can necessarily be like, oh, those 5 hours of leadership development resulted in $6 million of new sales. Like, you can't quantify it, especially because some people go to the training and nothing happens. So that's the other side of the thing is that sometimes people get all motivated, they're on a high, and then like Tuesday comes around, like, what were they supposed to do again? I'll just go back to my old ways.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Yeah, absolutely. I completely 100% agree with that. And so tell me, before you got to where you are now, right? You said for the past, or you spent over 8 years, right? So I don't know how long ago that was. But who were you before you got to this point? You know, what was your mindset? You know, what were you doing? What was you, I mean, who were you before you got to where you are now?
Yeah, so I was actually thinking about this a couple weeks ago because I was asked, like, hey, at what point did you, like, have the epiphany, I'll say, when it comes to, like, leadership development? And by no means have I arrived. But there was a point in time where certain things, like, just clicked in my head. And so before this stuff clicked, I was your, like, typical nice guy manager. So, I mean, my parents raised me, to be honest, and I cared about people's feelings. I wanted people to like me. I wanted to do things the right way. I wanted people to have fun and smile. I didn't want conflict. And so, as you can imagine, my flaw was that while I was a happy person, I couldn't give tough feedback. And I didn't actually help my people get anywhere because I let things slip under the rug. And so what's worse is I figured that out, that it wasn't working, but I didn't know what to do. And so I would switch between polar opposites. I'd be super nice guy, lenient Jamie, who everybody liked and wanted to work with. And then I'd realize that wasn't working. So I'd flip to freaking out about tiny little things. And so one, the inconsistency was bad, but two, the being on polar opposites of the spectrum just didn't work. If I was too nice, people thought I was fake. And if I was too mean, people were like, I don't want to work for you. And so 9 months in into my career as a manager, I had 3 employees when I got promoted to a manager, and 9 months in, they had all left. And I could easily, if you asked me at that time, I'd say it was their fault. But looking back, it's like, I just wasn't a good manager. I had every good intention, and I knew in my head, hey, I know what a good leader looks like, but I struggled to like actually execute on it. And so I was the nice guy who was stuck, I guess. That was me before.
Awesome. I at one point in my life was the same way. Like, I was just stuck, you know?
Yeah.
And so when I was a drill instructor, you know, if I was too hard, like, I already set the tone, you know, but if I was too soft and I tried to be hard, then they were like, oh, well, whatever. That's not how he usually is. You know what I mean? That's just so uncharacteristic. Yeah. So I think there really is a fine line between, you know, the balance between too hard, too soft. You know, we used to call them milk and cookies instructor. Like, oh, you're feeding your basic trainees milk and cookies and ice cream upstairs, aren't you? Oh, look, now you're yelling at them. Good job, Dad. You know, like, it was just, I don't know. But if you were hardcore, you were like, dude, you need to calm down. Like, this isn't like Rambo, you know? So, yeah, definitely there is a fine line.
Well, definitely. The worst part is I was failing. I mean, that was really the worst part. And so to picture this, so I was in – ultimately you could call it sales, right? And so when you're in sales, you're typically compensated via commission. And so if you're not a good manager and you can't keep your people ultimately deliver the product that makes you money, you're also not making very much. So – I had just moved out to Alberta. I'm from Ontario originally. And so I've been married for a couple of years and we're in debt. I'm not making very much money. Crazy, crazy hours. I have no team. And I mean, I want my wife to feel secure. I want, you know, everyone to be, there's so many things I want. And it just seemed out of reach. Like when we're talking about stuck, it's not just like, oh, darn it, I can't get promoted. it's like, oh, darn it. Can I actually even do this? How am I? I want to build a family. How can I actually even think about having kids when I'm not making enough money to pay our bills, right?
True. Yep.
Yeah, so that was me before.
Yeah, I just nailed it.
Failing.
It's like an awkward silence. We're like, nailed it.
Yeah, I wish it was nicer. I wish it was just, you know, because that's stressful, right? I mean, anybody who hasn't been winning.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. So that was me.
So looking back, can you actually pinpoint what exactly was your transformation or when it happened?
Sort of. So I couldn't tell you like the date. And pretty epic if I could. And I know there's some people who's like, this is the day it clicked. But so here's the thing. I've been really privileged to have had a lot of great bosses. But the best boss that had the most influence on me is someone I didn't report to, but they were one of my clients. And so I worked in sales, as I said, and this is right around the time, somewhere in the time where I had no one on my team, but I did have a new relationship with a client. They're an engineering firm. And so this guy, I don't know what his title was, general manager maybe for the engineering firm here in the city. And so we had a couple of people, like we're in recruitment. So I would hire people for his team and they would be contract employees. And so one of the things we did is we would take them out for lunch and be like, hey, how's your boss? Do you like it? What's the company like? Blah, blah, blah. And when I talked about, hey, how's your boss? They said all the nice things like, yeah, he's good. He cares. He works hard. He knows what he's doing, all that stuff. And so part of my job would be to dig in and find a problem so that I could go to my client and be like, I can help you be better. And I couldn't find this guy because I was like, what can this guy do to improve? And what they would say to me, all of them, and I had about five contractors at the time. So the five people that I had that worked for him said, the thing that would help him improve is if I improved. Like the thing that would make him better is if I could give more, because he works so hard. He cares so much. He does so much for us. And my only complaint is I wish I could do more for the company and for him. And at that point I was like, whoa, like, great managers aren't just better. It's not just like they can execute on stuff or read more books or all this. Like they're different. This guy was different. Like the way he did things, the way he interacted had to just be abnormal. And that's when it clicked that, hey, if I want to be a great boss, it's not just about like being better and executing more. I have to find a way to be different. And so that's when I actually started studying, hey, what makes people different. Like when if you think about it, you'll notice this. If you look at the best leaders, there's something that they do that's different. Whether that's actually working on the front people while everyone else hides in their office, or whether that's going out for lunch on their own dime, or whether that's pulling up a chair beside someone and working through a problem with them. Like there's things that people, that great managers do that's just different. And that's when it clicked, because there was no feedback I could give the guy. So that's when it started for me to change how I led people.
And I'll tell you, like, I've had people, I've walked in the office and they're on their phone or they're on their computer typing an email, and I'm trying to tell them, it's like, hey, man, I got this thing. I'm trying to work this out. I'm kind of having a hard time. And it's like, click, 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 click. Oh, yeah, man, we'll get to that. And yeah, man, no problem. You know. And then I got other guys, I go to the same problem, you know, whatever. I just, you know, knock on the door. I'm like, hey, sir, I got this thing. And he's like, hold on. Shut the computer off, phone off, slap, turn around, pull up a chair. Okay, what can I help you with? And, like, gives you an undivided attention. There's a guy.
Yeah.
His name is John Vroman. Mm-hmm. John Vroman is a speaker friend of mine, an amazing dude. And he's got a podcast, and, he's a speaker, and, you know, he's got all this stuff going on. He has a way of making you feel like when you guys are talking, you guys are the only people in the room. He literally, like, makes eye contact. He nods. He's like, uh-huh. And he's like, he shows so much that he's into the conversation, you know? And he just has that way of inviting you in to talk to him. And when you're done, you just feel like you had the best conversation ever. Like, you just got verbally hugged, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I know exactly
what you're talking about.
Dude, it's awesome. I've known managers that just won't even shut up their computer. Like, hold on, I got to send this email. Hold on, let me send it. You know what I mean? Like, your people are supposed to be number one. you know?
And the funny thing about that is, there's certain personalities that are going to, they're going to have an easier time doing those things. But mm-hmm. I mean, you just made me think, cause I remember a boss, he's actually a VP of mine. His name was Brian, and it's the same thing. He'd come in, and when you sat down, it's just like his eyes were almost piercing, but in a good way, because you're like, man, this guy actually cares. But I'll tell you what,
yeah.
We never sat at his desk. He never sat at my desk. We sat typically, like he'd come for an office visit. We may go in an office, but there are two chairs facing each other, and he had a notepad, and that was it. And anytime he looked down, it was only to write down things I was saying. That is an action that is different from most people. Even people trying to listen, they don't write down what you say. But I mean, if you're talking to someone and they're like, oh, that's good, and they start writing it down, you're like, that person listened and cares enough that they want to remember what I said. Like, that's different. That's not just, hey, I read 50,000 leadership books and I know exactly how to set strategy and stuff. Like,
right.
That's somebody who just does one tiny little thing different that makes a massive impact on people, right?
Yep. And then follows up. Yeah. And then follows up like right after, you know, like a conversation. Hey, man, I was thinking about, you know, what we talked about. And like, there's always got to be like an action takeaway, you know, like if I have a problem, you know, it's like, well, let me know what happens, you know, and then he'll come find you. Hey, I'm just following up. You know, it's been a couple of days, you know, how'd that go? And you're like, oh, my gosh. Yeah, I totally forgot. And yeah, you know, or you follow up with that person, like, hey, man, the advice was awesome. And then that makes them kind of feel good. And it's that reciprocation, you know, of respect, you know, back and forth, you know. Yeah, dude.
Yeah, we're talking about the same person, because like literally be a few days later, he'd shoot an email. Hey, did you end up looking into that resource I recommended? What did you think? How did this go? And it's just like, whoa. So good, yeah. Man.
Yep, absolutely. So looking forward, right? So we're at the point where you're like, you know what, enough, and I'm going to do this. And, you know, you're kind of just transforming into the podcast host and everything that you're doing. What do you think was the best part about what you've transformed into now? Or what's the best part about your journey so far?
Yeah, so there's two things. So at the time, once I started, like, finding success, I mean, it's fun. It's a lot more fun to lead a successful, highly productive, high performing team than it is a team that's failing. It's a lot more fun to lead a team where people like actually want to go to work. So like that was the best part as a manager. When I started seeing a return on my investment, I was like, this like little bit of like care and change, these little things that I've started to do, like they're really rewarding. Yeah. So as a manager, that was the best part there. Now, when I eventually pivoted my career and started doing what I do now, the best part is seeing other people have the light turn on. I mean, that's the most rewarding thing when you're talking to someone else, they're like, I get it. Oh man, that makes sense. And then when they try it and it works, I mean, that's rewarding. Cause that one, it's affirming that, hey, I didn't just give a whole bunch of garbage advice. I mean, if you apply what I tell you to and you fail, I mean, that'd be bad. So, but it's also, it's really cool. Cause it's that ripple effect, right? It's so good.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. So there's always two sides to every story. I believe there's always two sides. So what do you think was the worst part about your transformation?
So that's easy.
That's good.
I didn't become an overnight success, as much as it may sound like all of a sudden, like I had this conversation with a contractor about a client and he's different. And all of a sudden I started being different and, you know, everything became perfect green lights from there on out. My performance dropped immediately after that point in time, because one of the things that I started to do was I started to spend more time with my team. Because I've got this concept, it's called shoulder to shoulder leadership. It's where literally a manager works in a way where the shoulders can actually rub shoulders with their employees. Like if you're actually on the front lines, get your hands dirty, all that type of thing, you can be more effective. One of the benefits to that is you can coach in real time and be a more influential manager and train your people better. The problem is if your people suck or they're new, it takes a lot of time to do that. And so I was in sales. Yeah. So I'm judged on like cold calls. I'm judged on how many meetings I go on. I'm judged on how many projects come in, all this stuff. All of that dropped. And so not only was I a bad manager, but I'm a bad manager telling everybody that I know what I'm doing and I'm making these changes to how I lead and my performance is dropping. So I had the lowest cold calls. I had the lowest new meetings. I had the lowest every single metric you could imagine dropped because when like recruiters on my team were interviewing candidates, I was there with them. And so that short-term sacrifice, and I say short-term because eventually – I was able to turn the people on my team into highly effective recruiters, and I didn't even need to spend any time with them because they were so good. But in order to get them to where they could perform without me, I needed to spend time with them. And so that part sucked because I was like, I know that this is going to work, but it doesn't look like it's working right now. And there was a period, at least 3 months, where I was in my boss's office and defending everything. And fortunately, he was very understanding and he saw some of the positive changes. And so he was defending me up to the superiors who look at all the numbers saying, don't worry, Jamie's got it. Don't worry, Jamie's got it. And I mean, eventually things clicked and I ended up having the best year possible that year after. But that transition period where you start to try on something new and it's uncomfortable, you're not good at it, that was the hardest part.
Wow. You know, and I hear numbers, you know, if I can, I want to tell you a good minute and a half revelation that I had when I was in basic training.
Yeah.
So in basic training, as a drill instructor, they have inspections that they have to do. So second week, you do your, you know, your clothing drawer in your wall locker and, you know, you tear apart the entire dorm, right?
Yep.
Then you have your individual drill that you have to inspect on, and they have to have these movements down to a good point, you know. But then there's other things called MDC, which is the Master of Drill and Ceremonies. So he'll come and he'll inspect your flight and you. So like you do open ranks inspections, you know, and so the MDC is actually like you're getting demerited too, you know, and God forbid you get a demerit on your own drill movement, like that would be really stupid. But what I've learned is that I was so pissed when, like, I would teach them and they would get a demerit or they would, like, fail an inspection or something. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, I took it kind of personal. But what one of the best MDCs told me, and they usually rotate, like, every year, every 2 years. And I was down there for 4 years, and I met a lot of them. And what they told me is the best instructors, the best MTIs, you know, the guys who lead their flights, the best guys concentrate on the transformation and inspiring their flight and not about the numbers. Do not chase the numbers. Don't teach your flight according to this is what your drill movements are going to be graded on, so we're going to teach that way. It's like, don't do that. Like if you have to, like, beat your flight, which is basically push-ups, you know, flutter kicks, you know, whatever. You know, but basically beat your flight if you have to, but reward them when they do well, like treat them like children. And so one of the things in our squadron was Sun Tzu. We always lived by this. There was a group of us instructors that lived by this core principle of regard your soldiers as your children, and they will follow you into the deepest valleys. Look on them as your only son, and they will follow you even unto death. And that's an excerpt from Sun Tzu's Art of War. When I stopped focusing on the numbers and I started building relationships and I started treating them like they needed to be treated, the numbers came. Like I didn't have to do anything. They just came. I thought that was amazing.
Yeah. And it's ironic or good timing or a coincidence that you bring that up. Cause literally today I did a solo podcast episode on performance metrics, which is a really boring topic. And I hated them. I absolutely hate it. Like I was literally judged on how many times I literally picked the phone off the receiver. Like every attempted dial was tracked and I hated it. But on the other side of the spectrum, there's many companies where things are just so subjective that no one ever knows where they stand. And the moral of the message was exactly what you're talking about. Numbers and performance metrics can help you as a manager know where to coach and know where your team is doing well, and it can help with incentives and all that stuff. But what really matters is where are you taking your people, and can they see the correlation between their performance and actually getting there? Because if everybody walked in every single day to work, every employee, knowing this is what a successful day looks like for me, whether that's actions or activities or whatever that is, if you can help your people achieve that successful day every day, they're going to get whatever they want to get out of it, as long as there's like meaning behind it. It can't just be about hit these numbers, because if you hit these numbers, we'll get a gold star, or hit these numbers because you're supposed to, or hit these numbers because it'll make you good at your job. It's like, well, okay, if I'm good at my job, what do I get out of it? And maybe that's selfish, but I mean, that's what people want. It's like, hey, if I'm going to put in all this work, like, what's in it for me? And now being, again, it does sound a little selfish, but at the same time, the motivators for people aren't always selfish. Like me being financially successful may be a motivator, and that may sound selfish unless you understood what I'd like to do with the money. Maybe it's to help other people, but I'm still going to be thinking, how can me be performing well allow me to do X, right? It's the correlation between performance at work and personal achievement.
Boom.
And I love it.
Nailed it. I love it. I was going to say this, like, love it. So I got to know, man. I love this question. Who's been your biggest influencer?
So we were actually talking about this earlier, and there's two. So my biggest, let me put it this way. Okay. So I get a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for? A lot of good energy. That sounds really fluffy,
sure.
But, I feel really good when I get to impact other people. And so being able to see change, like that influences me. But I think one of the coolest things for me is, when I interview people on the show, for some reason, at the end of each episode, I get reaffirmed that what I'm doing matters. And I think that's just because, again, we were talking about this earlier, but the topics that we talk about are just like very real. But it's like, I feel like I hit the stop record button on an episode, or I feel like I hit the stop record button on like a video I'm doing for a course or a training or something like that. And I feel like, man, like this made sense, but it's only because of the feedback and the people I'm talking to. I mean, if I was just talking into a wall, I don't think I'd feel that way. So I think it's part of it's my audience. But another part is like the guests and the people who kind of remind me that what I do is important. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, man. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, it's the same thing when you and I chatted, at the end of our interview where I interviewed you on the show. And even when we hopped on together before we went live, I mean, everything that you said to me was just like, it was just reaffirming and really encouraging to me as a person. Like, I need to keep doing what I'm doing, because I know that, it's impactful and it's real. So I guess it's that feedback. I mean, I've also had some really great bosses, too many to count, and I won't go into all of them. And so I mean, there's a lot of, I've been really blessed and fortunate to have had a lot of people come in my life and encourage me and support me. And I don't know where I'd be without them, but
yeah.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, man. Yeah, totally did. So on the opposite side of that, who's been your biggest supporter?
My biggest supporter. You know, I'm going to say two specific people. So one being my wife. She allowed me to quit my job to do what I do.
Oh, boy.
And
oh, boy.
I walked away from a good, healthy, six-figure, stable job. I was at one company 8 years. No chance of me getting laid off. I was good at what I did. Made good money. Global opportunities. Great leadership at the company. That's why I didn't leave. And I totally walked away to do something I was more passionate about, because one of the things is in sales, they make you do more sales. And I'm not a huge fan of cold calling, and I'd rather do training and development, and the opportunities didn't align. But it was a big risk,
right?
Because my wife doesn't work. She stays home with the kids. She sells Stellan.jewelry as well. So if anyone wants some cool jewelry, let me know.
There you go.
So like, went from a good income to pretty much zero income. And so the fact that she even allowed me to do that, to get us started, I'm super grateful for that. But the other person is, there's a guy, he's the worship leader at our church that we go to. His name is Joel. And I get a text from him every couple of weeks where he's listened to one of my shows and just encouraging me, just saying, hey, I really appreciate it. Hey, this is what I get. And every time, like, we're in a group together, he reminds people, hey, you should go listen to Jamie's podcast. And I don't know. Like, for some reason, it's just like, man, thank you. You know this. We talk into a microphone.
Yeah.
You don't hear from anybody unless somebody takes the effort to reach out to you. And
yeah.
I mean, reviews are nice. And maybe it's a little bit of an ego thing, but he's someone who just on a regular basis just encourages me. And so I'm really appreciative of him.
So it sounds like your love language is affirmations.
Ooh.
If I had to guess.
Thought there. Probably. You know what? I haven't formally read that book. I have it somewhere in my house, and I couldn't tell you. I'm pretty sure you're probably right.
I'm gonna get on the same level real quick, and I can't tell you who wrote that book, but I know everything about that book because I've read it like four or five times, and I've done studies on it. I can't. Tell
yeah,
you.
I'm pretty sure.
I literally have no idea. And I'll know the name. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's that guy. And then tomorrow somebody will ask me. I'm like, man, I don't freaking know. But I can quote stuff out of that book because I've read it so many times. I'm
pretty sure it's on my bookshelf, like, right behind me. I'm pretty sure it's there. But, yeah, you're right. I feel good when people say nice things.
Yeah, man, could you have those, you know. So like, my wife's is touch, right? So like, I want to – dude, I'm – okay, we're totally straying off.
Yeah, we got to be careful on this conversation, right?
Dude, I want – like, yeah. Like I want to go to bed, and when I go to bed, I want to go to bed. You know what I mean? But she wants to cuddle, and she wants to hold, and I'm like, leave me alone. I want to go to bed. But I know that because my wife wants to, because that's her love language. You know, she wants to hold hands, and she wants to be held. But that's her love language. You know what I mean? So for me to be selfless in our marriage, I have to love her the way she wants to be loved. The same way is that she always affirms me, but she does it in a way that she makes me know that she's doing it. Like, oh, baby, you're like, you go do your show and you're going to rock your show because I know that you're going to. And I'm affirming you. And I'm like, ha ha. You know what I mean? Let me affirm you real quick. You know, I'm going to affirm you real quick. It's like, okay, yeah, I got it. Okay. Ha ha ha. You know, but it's just so funny. Like, I know people that if you give them a gift, holy crap, did you just make their day? Like, they love
that's my mom.
Gifts. Yeah.
Yep.
So that's her love language. Like, if you give her a gift, she's, oh my gosh, you know, I think that when you can do the same as a leader, not, you know, touching hands and hold, but when you can lead people according to their strength, or you can lead people according to how they want to be led, dude, the production value is like 10X, you know?
Do you know the name Gordon Treadgold? So he is probably one of like the top five leadership Twitter guys. So he's a leadership consultant, and he told me a story that he had invited all of his direct level reports to some conference he was holding somewhere else. And he made a decision during that weekend to give people hugs. And this is a touchy subject. It's no pun intended. Absolutely pun intended there. But when you're talking about the love language of touch, there are people who physical contact is important to them. And you don't need
Absolutely.
To physical contact doesn't always mean sexual harassment. And you do have to be wise and be careful. But he said by the end of that conference, he went to this is a cool story. He went to give a keynote speech at the end of this thing, and his people interrupted him and said, you're not talking, we are. And they played, and I'm not kidding you at all, they played Can You Feel the Love Tonight from The Lion King. And they said, this is how we feel about having you as a leader. Like, we feel like you legit care. And all he did, the only thing he did different was hug people. Now, that's a little bit like, what do I do in that moment? There's certain personalities, obviously, that are going to be okay with it and not. And there's a whole bunch of things that go into it. But it's just cool. Like, some people want to be touched, and you can do that respectfully. Give people a handshake. That's physical contact professionally. Putting your hand on someone's back and giving them a physical pat on the back when they did a good job, that could mean something to somebody. And, ultimately what you're talking about here is, like, knowing how your people respond to different things and knowing what they care about, right? So anyway, just wanted to put that out there.
No, that was awesome. That's awesome. I'm actually in a community called the number one, One Life Fully Lived. And at the conference, everybody hugs. And there's people that clam up. They're like, because like John Roman on stage, like, all right, I want everybody to stand up. I want you to look to your left and to your right. I want you to find somebody you don't know. And I want you to hug. Like, he just, it's the long pause. Like, what I want you to do, I want you to hug, you know? And everybody's like, what? And some people are like, yeah, you know? But there's other people like, if you come at me, I'm going to kill you. And there's people that just, it is so funny to watch the dynamic.
Oh, so good.
You know?
But everyone puts a smile on their face, don't they?
Yes. Yeah. Dude. So my wife, so John Roman talks about being a moment maker, and I've adopted this philosophy. And I try to make moments everywhere I go. My wife and I were in Bed Bath & Beyond a couple days ago. No, we were in Bath & Body Works a couple days ago. And so we were kind of talking to this lady, and I was like, yeah, dude. And I just like went to high five her, and she like stared at me like I just like murdered her dog. And I was like, all right, so we're going to walk away, you know? And then I tried it again to another worker, and she was like, yeah. And then I went back to that worker, and she like smiled at me, like nodded her head, and gave me like this pathetic high five. So at that moment, I was like, this is awesome. So as we were leaving, we got our stuff, and this young couple had to have been 20, 21, maybe 22. I was like, we're giving out high fives in Bath & Body Works today. And I high-fived this girl, and the dude behind her was like, I'll kill you for touching my girlfriend, you know? And so I, like, high-fived her, and then the guy, like, gave me this pathetic high-five. And then I walk out, and I'm like, everybody's giving high fives at Bath & Body Works. And this lady walks by, she's like, yeah, and high-fives me. I was like, oh, my God. Like, I got scared. And then next person
behind
me was like, what's going on? And I was like, high-fives. And she's like, oh. And like, what?
I'm so glad you did that.
It's so funny. Like, I love creating like these weird moments for people, but it's this adoption of like, I want to lead by example and I want to live my own brand. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh man. That's so
I want to have fun.
It was awesome. Yes.
I mean,
and
so many people
face,
are just
like, I went to the mall. I did not expect to get high fives from everybody in the mall. Like, I'm never come back to this mall again. Like, some people looked at, you know, or they'll tell their friends like, dude, I got high-fived in Bath & Body. And they'll laugh about it, like, what? And then they'll try to do it the same way and try to reciprocate that emotion and try to reciprocate that experience. And I think that's pretty awesome. Wow,
hey,
we got totally off topic.
Yeah, one more thing on that, though. So it is, even for the awkward, like, everybody listening needs to try it because it is the easiest thing. Even if you get a crappy high-five, you put up your hand in the high-five position. People know exactly what it means and exactly what to do, and most of them will actually do it. And I remember I used to walk around my office, speaking of high fives and high five people, because that's just who I am as well, and it annoyed people. But sometimes I just put my hand up, and as they were going to high five me, I was like, it's so easy to get a high five, isn't it? And they're like, oh, you manipulated me. It's like, yes, I did, but let's have some fun.
And then you got to comment on how they acted too, right? So one of the things that I noticed is if you turn around and go, see their smile? You see how big their smile is? And then they'll turn around and they'll go, no, whatever. But they'll be smiling the entire time. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like, see, like you need to high five somebody. Like, high five, you know. So every time, so when I'm at a conference and I'm speaking at a conference, I high five annoyingly as much as I can. You're right. So if we do like a share, like, hey, somebody, tell me what your best value is, or, you know, what do you value the most? Cool. Hey, high five everybody. And then everybody high fives, you know, and then I go to the next person. I'm like, what about you? Like, yeah, high five, you know? And so it just becomes like, and by the end of the conference, like, everybody's like high fiving each other. Like, yeah, dude. Like, everybody's sharing and everybody's high fiving. I'm like, look what I did.
You know? So cool, man.
Great moments, man.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah. So, man, where are you headed now? Like, let's talk about this. Like, so where are you headed, man? What kind of new adventures, businesses, family? So what do you got going on, man? What are you cooking up?
Yeah. So, it's time to make money as a business. My philosophy was when I launched the podcast in November of last year, and my philosophy from day one was give everything away for free as much as possible. And up until June this year,
say it again. It was
my philosophy was give away as much stuff for free as possible.
Okay. Okay. I got you. Okay.
Yeah. So up until June, you couldn't actually buy anything from me. There's nothing. There's no like PayPal, no button, no buy this. Everything I had free. Free training, free podcast, email,
sure.
Everything. And that's only sustainable for such too long, right? I need to support my business somehow. And I had a plan to actually do that for a certain period of time. But I as much as that's good for building awareness and brand and marketing and all that stuff, if you really want people to change and be impacted for the better, and if I don't want to lose my house, you need to offer something that costs money. And so I've developed a new program that's launching in August 1st. It's an 8-week program called Different. And finally, there's stuff people can buy that if someone is serious about making change, they can actually go through an 8-week training program where they get access to me for one-on-one coaching, which is really cool. Because the thing about free stuff is people take it so flippantly and they don't necessarily apply it. It's like, yeah, I downloaded 50 free eBooks last week and I didn't read any of them. But if they pay like $30 for an eBook, they're going to read it, right? So that's kind of what's on the go right now. It's like hardcore, like launch mode slash I get to start working with some people in like just a few weeks, one-on-one, and everything, like all the consulting, all the calls, all the mentoring, all that stuff has been free until now. And the big adventure is, can I actually make a viable business, or do I need to go get a part-time job at Starbucks? I'm totally kidding.
And this is all about, so you want to make money off the podcasting, or is it podcasting and everything else?
It's just going to be through leadership development programs. The podcast is always going to be free. I've thought about maybe working sponsors in and stuff, but not a priority right now. So like right now it's like, hey, let me build a program where people actually get results, focus 100% of my attention on making that program great and working with people and getting some results out of it. And then we'll see where it goes from there. So it's going to be a hardcore 8 weeks.
I will. So I'm going to introduce you to a couple of people that will that will help you do exactly what you want to do. I got the perfect people in mind. So we'll talk offline about it.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Good.
Yeah. So what was the best resource that you found during your journey?
So you're referring like a physical hold in my hand resource type thing?
Dude, it could be experience. Like I believe that experience is the best teacher. You know what I mean? But like any kind of resource, you know, it could be a book, it could be a person, it could be money, it could be like, what was the one thing that says, if I did not have this, then I would not be the person that I am. You know what I'm saying?
Ooh, now the question just got deep. I'm going to say podcasts. There's a couple things.
Okay.
I got, if you're into goal setting, I got the Freedom Journal from John Lee Dumas. That was good. I paid for Podcasters Paradise, which is like $1,000 podcast training program. That was good. My guests coming on the show teach me a lot, but podcasts are free development. And if you're listening right now, you've got it in your ears. You understand this. I started listening to them years ago. I would listen to things on like how to manage people, how to lead, how to sell. I learned entrepreneurship because literally, so I was in sales and I drove a lot because you go to client meeting after client meeting. So I had a 25-minute drive into work, 25 minutes home. So there's almost an hour. Plus I'd go on 3 or 4 meetings. So I'd spend on average, maybe let's say 2 hours in the car. That's being probably a little bit conservative.
Yeah.
I used to listen to a lot of music. I play the drums. I love music. And I bought an ebook one day, and I don't even remember which one it was, but I bought an ebook, and then I started listening to podcasts after that. And I was consuming hours and hours of like free education. And it taught me how to start the business I started. It taught me how to grow my team. It taught me how to do more sales. And if you were to remove that, that vehicle of podcasts from my life, I literally would not be doing what I'm doing right now.
Wow.
Literally.
That's awesome.
Yep. Boom. Listen to podcasts.
Yeah. I'm the
maybe
same,
life transformation
I'm the same way.
Radio.
I mean,
subscribe to that one.
Like I've heard of them, you know, like I was kind of like, oh, whatever, you know, like years ago I've heard of them and I would catch a couple different ones, a couple leadership ones, a couple millionaire you know, like how to make money, podcasts, business ones, huge ones, like bigger pockets, you know, bigger pockets. Everybody's like, oh, yeah, those are bigger pockets. Oh, my God. There's a couple that I'm like, dude, holy crap, man, where would I be without this, you know, this podcast? Mm-hmm. My plan is to take the first, I don't know how this is going to work, but I want to take the first like 50 or 100 episodes and put it on a thumb drive. Because most vehicles are coming with thumb drives now, or coming with USB ports now. So I want to take the first 50 or maybe 100 episodes of my show. Maybe I'll do the 50 because my show is about 45 minutes to an hour. So that's like 50 hours. So people who
isn't that crazy?
Drive, yeah. Like people who drive back and forth, like I have 20 minutes one way, 20 minutes the other way, or 30 minutes one way, 30 minutes the other, whatever. You can listen to a, you know, one show a day for, you know, 2 months or whatever. But I want to have people buy that, or not even buy it, but just like pay shipping, or I pay shipping, or however, you know, 99 cents for this thumb drive, whatever. But what you would do is you would have it on a landing page, or like on a funnel, you know what I mean? And so they buy your thing for free, pay shipping, and then you get their email address, right? And then now they're on their offers, they're on you. Like, I think that would be a really cool way to do it.
Absolutely.
You know, not only do they have thumb drives, you know, you go buy a thumb drive because you know, and this is cool for you, man, you know that as soon as somebody subscribes, right, to your email, then you can start sending them out offers. Like, oh, by the way, not only do I have a show, but I have a leadership program. It's an 8-week course. You know, it's whatever. Mm-hmm. Here's what it is, right? You can work with me. I'll coach you. I can, you know, whatever. And so the lead-in or the main offer is get this thumb drive with all of my episodes on it, the first 50 or first 100 or whatever, and you can listen to it in your car. You can listen to it wherever. It's on a thumb drive. And then, by the way, I now have your email address. I can send you out offers. We can talk. We can, you know, whatever. I think that's the new way of doing it, man.
Yeah, well, and it goes back to even what I was saying before. I mean, one of the challenges with giving away stuff is that sometimes people don't take it seriously. At the end of the day, it's about serving people better, because if you send something physical that people can hold, at least this is how I work. I mean, I'm going to read a physical book more than I'm going to read a PDF on my computer screen. They both may be incredibly valuable. In fact, the physical book may be worse, but I'm still going to be more likely to thumb through it a little bit. And at the end of the day, that's the goal. I mean, if you could get your stuff in other people's ears so that they can make change happen, that's ultimately the goal. And then obviously to be able to make some money so you can continue doing that, and serve more people. I mean,
super,
that's
huge.
That's the ultimate goal of the business, unless your business sucks and you're greedy, is to serve more people, right?
yeah, that's true. Absolutely. I think that's what I'm going to do, man. I think that's going to be, once I get up to a certain level, I think that's just what I'm going to do. Take that thumb drive and just, hey man, here's a, you know, I'll ship it out to you. Send me your mailing address and got your email address. And, you know, I think it's just a good lead into, hey, this is what I'm about. So I think that's where I'm going with that. Here's a part of the show that it's a shameless plug. You can plug a friend, quote, websites, Facebook, products, movie, give a shout out, whatever you want. This is your time. I mean, you've been shining all show, but this is your moment, man. This is your time to shine. So shameless plug, go.
I hate this part, but all right. I saw this question coming. I was like, I don't want to be shameless.
I'm on the spot.
Here's what I'll say though. Here's something free. So I'm doing a live web class on manager productivity tomorrow on Thursday, and I'm doing them on a regular basis. But if you want to learn how to save time and increase your productivity and your team's productivity, go to yourbestmanager.com/webinar. Again, that's yourbestmanager.com/webinar, and I will teach you how to use positioning. And just so this isn't sleazy, I'm going to tell you about my different program at the end of that webinar. So it's 45 minutes of actionable training. It's not one of those things where it's a giant sales pitch, but at the end, for people who want more, I've got opportunities for people who want more. I mean, you can take the free stuff. There's like a cheat sheet you can download, plus like a whole bunch of stuff. It's like, if you just do this and follow my advice, it's going to work. But some people want a little bit more help implementing it. And that's why I've programmed together. Because for some people, it's like, hey, do this. And like, that makes sense. How? And other people do like, yeah. Like, do this. And like, okay. And they can do it. So that's why there's the offer at the end of that webinar. But if you're interested in becoming a better manager and want some free training, I will teach you tomorrow. And then probably next Thursday as well. I'll be doing it. And probably the Thursday
at
after.
What time?
It'll be 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I believe. Yes, it is. Absolutely, it is.
Yeah.
So there's my shameless plug.
There you go, man.
Yeah.
When you speak at conferences, you're like, no selling from the stage. And then when you're on like different podcasts, right? You'll like plug my website and do this and what. Like they try not to do that. But on this show, man, I really want to highlight, how people are impacted, and that's going to impact a lot of people, man. And I might try to make it. I'm not sure exactly what's going on at 1 o'clock. I know I got some stuff going on tomorrow, but if I get a chance, dude, I'd definitely be there because I'm interested in being more productive.
And you know what? That's the funny thing about shamelessness. I mean, you kind of hit it. Obviously, something that's important to you is elevating other people. It's I love your podcast for that, or your radio show for that. But one of the things I've been challenged with, obviously, I'm uncomfortable talking about myself. And I don't mean that to be humble or anything, but I've been challenged that this is something for everybody, but you have a moral obligation to give something to other people that's going to be helpful. And whether that's giving it away for free or charging for it, you've got a moral obligation. If you know something that someone doesn't know that's going to make them better, whether it's as simple as giving someone feedback or as complicated as showing someone a new framework, you've got a moral obligation to do that. In my case, the best way for me to do that is to make money from it, because if I don't make any money, I can't do it. And so if I want to serve more people, I need people to obviously pay me. But beyond that, if I want people to actually see change happen, they need to put some skin in the game, like as I was saying earlier. So that is something that I appreciate you asking me to shamelessly plug my stuff, because it's something I need to get better and more confident at, just saying, dude, buy my stuff. I'll change your life.
Yeah, there you go. I love it.
So there's my plug.
So as we wrap up, deliver your best nugget of knowledge that will motivate, transcend, and inspire someone.
All right. So this is like one sentence, and I've already said it today. I'm going to say it again. All right.
Okay.
For managers listening or leaders, you will always struggle with employee motivation if your employees cannot see the correlation between performance at work and personal achievement. So if your people can understand the different, like understand how their high performance, how their productivity, how their work means something or delivers something that they want, they're going to be engaged and motivated. If they can't see that, you're screwed. So that's my nugget of wisdom.
Oh, dude, that's awesome. And it kind of goes, I have a signature talk called Live Your Brand. And when I talk to sales and marketing people, it's like, you have to believe in your product and you have to believe in what you're selling and you have to believe it. Like if you're just selling to sell to make money, then you're just going to suck and you're not going to be that great. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And if you just believe in the company that you're leading and you have to really, because I love how Simon Sinek talks about people buy why you do something, not what you do. And if you want to get people's buy-in, they have to buy into the leader first and the leader's vision second. And I talk about this all the time in the military. And a lot of senior leaders get pissed off at me. They're like, no, they follow me because I have to. I'm like, right. So they're following you out of fear, or they're following you out of because they have to. Well, in the military, we have to. In the civilian world, they're like, F you, I quit. So pretty much how that goes.
I remember I was talking to my wife the other day, and we both used to work at McDonald's. That's where we met. I won't go into the story there. McDonald's was great, but you get to a point. She was there for she was a second assistant manager. She made it higher up than I did. I think like 6 years or something like that. But there came to a point where she didn't want to be there. And although I have tremendous respect for the managers, the leaders, the owners, I still recommend that place. There were times where driving to work, she would rather get in a car accident So she didn't have to go to work. And I remember feeling this way at my company, maybe 2-3 years in when I was going through a rut, where I literally remember driving, being like, hey, if I get hit by a car, I don't have to go to work. That's fear motivation. Like,
yeah,
yes, I was going to work. Yes, I was going to work hard. I didn't want to. But imagine if I was driving, being like, I can't wait to get there. I can't wait to get there. I can't wait to get there. I mean, think about the difference in productivity and performance and happiness. Difference between leading from fear and leading through inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Boom.
So as we end the show, give a call to action. What should someone do today? You talked about the webinar, ebooks and whatnot, maybe set a goal, plan something, journal. What would be your call to action?
I've got one. It's really, really easy. Hop over to iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play or wherever it is. Find the Life Transformation Radio podcast and subscribe.
Thanks, man.
That's it.
Awesome.
If you haven't subscribed, go subscribe to that. Because what do you do each week? You talk about, like, you know, people going from one place to a better place. Is that something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's pretty much it, man. You go from where you are to where you want to be or where you think you could be, or yeah.
Yeah, so if you haven't arrived yet, you need this. And if you've already arrived, you should reach out to Sean and come on the show. And good for you if you've arrived. I don't know anyone who's arrived.
I know, right? Yeah, I threw a question there, like, you know, do you think your transformation is complete? And I'm like, dude, I'm just getting started. And I've been doing this, you know, a couple months and, you know, been speaking in years. And, you know, it's just like I'm just getting started. You know, I don't think anybody really arrives, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I guess my world, and you mentioned ebooks. So one of the things I think makes managers great is just the ability to ask good questions. And one question you could literally ask your team tomorrow that would make a huge difference is just ask one. Just pick one employee tomorrow of yours or one person on your team. So if you're a leader in any capacity, you don't have to have the job title manager. Pick someone and just ask them this question. How am I doing? And that question will make a massive difference in the way you operate that day. And it may even cause some self-awareness and self-reflection because you might start to think, I wonder what they're going to say. So that question is really powerful. Mm-hmm. And I do have an ebook on my website, yourbestmanager.com, where I've got 12 questions. The book's called 10 questions that'll make you a better leader, but I added two. So it's 12. So that's the other thing you do. Go subscribe to and then get the ebook.
So I was in an article on entrepreneur.com. It says five things the best leaders do. It's on my website. And I was number five. And the one thing that I do, I just said do. The one thing that I do is I always ask feedback from the people that I lead. And when I start, I thought I was like the new hotness. I'm like, oh, dude, I'm like the best leader ever, dude. Like, I let them go to lunch. And yeah, man, I'm like the best. And that really wasn't the case. That really wasn't that not at all. They had an earful for me. Some of it was good, you know, some of it was bad. Some of it I was like, I don't do that. And they're like, no, like you actually do. Like you make people feel, you know, whatever. Or I don't like it when you do this. I'm like, but that's me.
Oh, it hurts
that's,
so much,
know,
doesn't it? But it's so good.
Dude, it hurts. But when I asked people feedback, you know, I was like, really? Like, I didn't never think of doing that. You know, some of the best ideas come from the lowest people on the totem pole. They really do. And I became a way better leader because I firmly believe that managers manage from the back and leaders lead from the front, you know?
Yep.
And so I became a better leader based on the feedback that the people that I was leading gave me. And some people are like, I'm too proud. Like, I'm the leader. Like, what do they know? Like, you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised.
Yeah, and it's you're missing out on a huge opportunity if you don't solicit feedback.
Huge.
I was told early on that you're going to stop receiving feedback at some point, and it's either because you don't need it or you can't handle it, and we all need it.
Yeah.
So if you're not getting feedback, it's because you can't handle it. And that was something I was always aware of because if I hadn't heard feedback in a while, I had to start questioning, am I not asking for it or am I not handling it well when people give it to me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Huge. Dude, this has been awesome, man. I thank you so much for coming on the show, man.
Yeah, it's been a privilege of mine, although it looks like we're 9 minutes over an hour, so maybe I talk too much.
Yeah. Well, dude, it's just, I can talk about leadership forever, but it's easy, man, because, like, you're a host and I'm a host, and we just, man, the energy is amazing. But, yeah, man, I really want to honor your time, and, man, I appreciate you coming on the show. You have been amazing, and, yeah, everything about your podcast and what you've got going on, man, you're going to inspire a ton of people.
Well, thank you. It's been an honor and a privilege.
All right, man. I'll definitely talk offline, and I look forward to learning more about what you're doing and helping you in any way, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's all I got too. Thank you. That's the only thing I want to say is thank you.
Thank you, man. Life Transformation Radio listeners, another impactful episode with impactful guests doing amazing, incredible things to elevate everyone around them. If anything in this episode resonated with you, please like, share, comment on Facebook, on iTunes, on Stitcher, show your friends, go to yourbestmanager.com, get in touch with Jamie Newman. As you heard, the guy is absolutely crushing it. So, again, thank you for your support, and we are live every Wednesday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time and every first and third Friday. And as we close the show, I always say live your brand. Find opportunities every day to live out the values that you hold in your heart, and I call that living your brand. And until next time, just remember, live your brand. Good night.